Welcome to Conversations on Doing Good, when we talk with leading Asia-based philanthropists and business leaders on their views, strategies, and objectives in investing in the social sector. I am Ruth Shapiro, founder and chief executive of CAPS, the Center for Asian Philanthropy and Society. With each conversation, we seek to understand what motivates a philanthropist, why he or she picks the types of projects they do, and what they see as the role of private money in addressing social challenges. In this episode, Indonesian conglomerate Giti Vice Chairman and philanthropist Sherry Noor Salim will share her views on blended finance, collaboration, and the concept of Trihata Karana. So thank you very much, Sherry, for coming on to our podcast. As I mentioned to you, the Center for Asian Philanthropy and Society, CAPS, is doing a podcast series with leading philanthropists from around Asia. And we're delighted that you can join us today. I think of you a little bit as a maverick philanthropist. A lot of people in Asia really focus on their locality. They focus on traditional education, healthcare. They focus on their communities, and that's all good. You have gone in a different direction. Utilize global resources toward addressing those issues as well as others. I wonder if you can just explain the evolution of your thinking regarding philanthropy.
Thank you, Ruth. I really admire what you do. I have to say that, and in probably similar to many Asian families, I think the family history has some influence. And certainly for my family, it's quite fascinating because my grandparents, both maternal and from my father's side, have very tough beginnings, but they have always been quite philanthropic. So I think they moved from China to Southeast Asia, Singapore and Indonesia. They wanted to help out in terms of the communities. And in Singapore, with their siblings, supported schools. And then they went back to China when it opened up to also support our village. My mother's side is also fascinating in the sense he is kind of a scientist. For example, in Indonesia, they call it becak, but it's like the rickshaw, but with a bicycle in front. So he was the inventor of that. He combined it with the bicycle and he introduced that.
Everywhere.
Yes, so it started by my grandfather in this place called Matraman. And my grandmother actually was the one who made it into a thriving business using microcredit. So she's very enterprising.
Yeah. What area was that? Was that in Jakarta or outside?
Yeah, this is in Jakarta. And so she would actually look after them and she would be like their mother. So I think it starts from that kind of spirit of working
Absolutely.
With the community. And I think then my parents' time, because I think they were educated overseas in Singapore and then in the United Kingdom, so they also brought in more international partners and technology, you know, as they developed the businesses. And they have been quite pioneering. So they actually started the first or the world's largest aquaculture farm in Indonesia.
Aquaculture. Fish farming, right?
Shrimp farming. Actually, this was preceding the Asian financial crisis. Uh-huh. It was very successful. And in fact, you know, it had 2% of the global revenues. And then it had also been the best quality in terms of the bacteria count. And many research has been put in with, you know, international technologies. So they had the whole value chain and supply chain to become the leading industry on shrimp farming. And it was all organic. So this is one thing I take pride in also, that not only they are sort of philanthropic and value creation, but they are ecological.
Well, I think, at a time when it wasn't really on people's radar screen.
My father protected all the mangroves and he said, if you want to do a sustainable business, you have to protect the environment. I guess we learn from them.
It sounds like your family are all somewhat maverick philanthropists in that they're forward thinking and thinking about the ramifications of what they do in their work as well as in their philanthropy.
Yes.
And so when you started, then you were already connected to international organizations, is that right?
I was happily doing my studies, then came back to help out with the family business. Then the financial crisis hit.
Right.
And that hit us very, very badly. And in particular, the shrimp farm was actually taken over by the government. So it was a very difficult period. And there was also a lot of political issues and attacks. Also, there was, as you know, the ethnic and other aspects. So I reached out because I had this very special friend, Peggy Dulaney, and she invited me to her foundation, Synagos. I was one of the co-founding members of the Global Philanthropic Circle. When she came to Indonesia and I went with her to visit some NGOs, my parents were with sort of international business partners, and I think our generation was exposure to the NGO world.
Right.
So Peggy introduced me to the NGO world and some of the international organizations like the World Bank.
So Sherry, I was planning on asking you this question at the end, but it's appropriate now. Of course, we're in a crisis in the world. What do you think we can take from what's happening now and really use it to improve the world?
Yes, this is really, I mean, I have passed on as a result of COVID-19. We can look at it as a lesson from nature, I think. It is also a stark reminder of, you know, how fragile humanity is. And, you know, this tiny micron virus have this impact. This is the time that actually we need the mega action where humanity can unite together. And this is also, I think, the World Economic Forum calls it the Great Reset. And I do really hope that and believe that there is that chance. And I know China has declared that they are prioritizing the Sustainable Development Goals issues, unemployment issues, to reset all the areas to focus on the ecological aspects also, which I thought was really meaningful. And, you know, to go down to the different area where they would have guidelines to think through the key priorities that affect the welfare of the people. So I hope that actually more countries will focus on SDGs versus GDP.
You are listening to Conversations on Doing Good, a podcast series put on by CAPS, the Center for Asian Philanthropy and Society. We're at that fork in the road, right? And when the recovery happens, I just really hope that this is that we go in the right direction. And you're really helping to push us into that right direction with what you're trying to do with the Trihita Karana Forum. Can you explain what that is and what the goals of it are?
Sure. So the Trihita Karana Forum, and this is a Bali. I learned this term from Pak Adhika. Adhika was the former Minister of Tourism of Indonesia. He's Balinese, but he has now become a trustee of our foundation and also the president of our Kura Kura Bali project. So he was the one who introduced this term to me because I was going to develop this island, Kura Kura Bali, and I thought that if we could develop it, you know, respecting the local values. And so he said, well, do you know this value, Trihita Karana? No, I have no idea, you know. And so he explains the tree is three, T-R-I is three,
right.
Hita, H-I-T-A is happiness,
And
Karana is the ways or the reasons. So the three ways to happiness. The Balinese, they believe that it's the harmony of people with others. The second harmony is the harmony of people with nature and ecology. Mm-hmm. And the third is the harmony of us with the spiritual.
Yeah. Well, that is wonderful.
Yeah, in fact, it transcends, it's not just Balinese. Of course, Bali
No.
has the Hindu background, but so this is actually from Hindu side. The Pope has written, there's a papal paper on the three harmonies. In Chinese, it's Tian Di Ren, which is the
Yeah.
three harmonies, is
Right.
exactly. And also in Islam. So Hablum min Allah, Hablum min Alam, Hablum min Anas. Yeah, so
Yeah.
Anas and Alam are aligned. So it's, I think many cultures have the same three harmonies.
And what is it that you tell us about the forum and what the goals are?
So I think we thought that this is such a beautiful and powerful philosophy. But then I was invited, again, this is the UNSDSN organization, the UN. I think initiated Jeff Sachs, you know, we invited them to start the Southeast Asia headquarters in our Purakura Bali. And they, at that time, introduced a concept that was pre-SDGs. So the Millennium
It's
Development.
MDGs.
Yes. So we mobilized efforts and we launched that Southeast Asia headquarters during the first Tritakarana Forum in Purakura Bali. Mari Pangestu was the Minister of Tourism, and she was the person who gave us the idea of the campus to promote sustainable development and creative economy. And so I think that was how Tritakarana started. So I would say, you know, it was a collaboration with the government and our foundation. And I think at that time I was new to that, you know, because I was very excited to join this Business and Sustainable Development Council. Paul Polman, Jeremy Oppenheim, John Lovitch made me realize there are other business leaders who are really concerned about these issues. Because for quite some time, I felt very alone. If you talk about environment or poverty, you are not business focused and you are sidelined.
But let me ask you, Sherry, what's your sense in Asia? You're in Singapore, but, you know, come from and work throughout Indonesia. Do you feel like the needle is moving in terms of business leaders that you work with and talk to?
Yes, I think because I'm also part of the Asia Philanthropy Circle, we feel that there's a lot of work that needs to be done. I think your research also points to that. And there are policies that could actually support those directions.
One of our findings in the Doing Good Index, but throughout our work, is that philanthropists and business leaders tend to want to work in ways that are aligned with government. So they want to work on education and health and poverty and sustainability. So when we talk to governments, we say, you should unleash this capital to the extent that you can, because it's going to go to the very things you want it to. Fortunately, a number of governments are taking meetings with us. So I think where you and I and our organizations are delivering the same message.
I think there's still some way to go from, of course, a lot of the Asian philanthropists are still in the business. There are those that, of course, have set up foundation like Lawrence Lien and others that they have fully focused on the philanthropic front.
Right.
But many who are still running the business as
Absolutely.
Well as involving philanthropy. So I think that there are different roles they can play and they need to play. Blended finance to me is one key area where we can align everybody. There's a lot of work that can be done
to
leverage
win-win.
Funding, yeah, to really solve the SDGs, at least have a chance at that.
So Sherry, just for those who are listening who may not be familiar with this term, what would you say is the quick definition of blended finance?
OECD defines blended finance as the strategic use of development and philanthropic capital. These are the concessional capital for the mobilization of additional finance towards SDG-related investments.
What do you think the pros and cons are of, in effect, engaging at that multilateral level?
I think that we are in this mess today because a lot of businesses do not actually try to align or at least understand the issues from other stakeholders, or maybe they are also constrained by the short-term markets and other funding and other, you know, the analysts, you know, they have all these constraints. They do not feel they have the luxury or they have the right to be going sort of more horizontal in learning about other stakeholders and just focus on the bottom line. And I think the business goals also have to take responsibility. For example, Robert Kaplan has now moved the needle where he believes in multi-stakeholder value creation, or Michael Porter called it shared value.
Not zero sum.
It is not zero sum. And I really feel that myself engaging with all these partners, it helps with our work. We actually have been working for a long time with MIT faculty on this leadership program that we try to engage multi-stakeholders. We are working with Pakat Foundation to support indigenous leaders. Mm-hmm. So leaders from very remote areas who, you know, for women who started farming cooperative or, you know, fishermen initiatives. And so they have never traveled outside of Papua or the different parts of Sulawesi. And then they join our program and gave them the network and the connection, and they were able to go back and they got their local government support. And those who were activists that were actually fighting the government, in the end, won support from the government. So the outcomes is so much better for the businesses that support them, as well as for those who believe in this collaborative approach and multi-stakeholder approach. And so I am a full believer in this approach. And I think that the business schools have to change, and they are changing. I think blended finance should be a core, become a main area.
I think the students now are really demanding that because there's more awareness of younger generations, younger than me and even younger than you. But I think that's very true. You know, in some ways, it's so intuitive that we should work across government, private sector, and the social sector and work together. But as you know and I know, it's very difficult because oftentimes people are talking a different language, even if they're talking in the same language. The leadership that you're providing is very helpful because really, until you start having those conversations and working together, you don't know what's possible.
Yes, the emerging future. And I think especially in these kind of times, we need these bridging leaders more than ever.
I think it's a very positive, uplifting note on which to end this conversation. I just applaud your work. The other thing that you can't help but hear when talking to you is that throughout your life, you've been very open to new ideas. I just think that it's wonderful that you're open-minded and absorbing all of the best thinking from centuries ago, from other cultures, and bringing them together in a modern way. So kudos to you, Sherry Nur Salim. It's really a pleasure and a privilege to hear from you.
What we say is that open mind, open heart, and open will. So we can meet the emerging future together.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Conversations on Doing Good. Please follow our conversations wherever you get your podcasts or through the CAPS website at caps.org.